This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The effort to control the growth of the federal deficit was showing some progress before Hurricane Katrina howled into the Gulf Coast. Faced with mounting bills for homeland security, wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and relief packages for hurricane victims, the Republican leadership in Congress wants to cut spending in other areas. Last Thursday, the Senate passed a budget bill that would slash $35 billion over the next 5 years from federal programs, including Medicare and food stamps. The House is expected to come out with a plan for deeper cuts later this week. In just a moment, we'll find out more about these cuts and about how Alaskan oil and California's federal courts got drawn into the budget battle, and we'll play an online simulation game that will help you help us balance the federal budget. If you have thoughts about slashing or boosting funds for mass transit, defense, health, or Social Security, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Later this hour, the latest twist in allegations of political bias and political manipulation at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But first, the budget. And we begin here in Studio 3A with Dan Parks, Assistant Managing Editor for Congressional Quarterly, the magazine's former economics and finance editor. Nice to see you again.
It's good to be back.
It's a little unusual to do a budget show in November. Wasn't the budget already passed this year?
Well, they passed something called a budget resolution in the spring, but that's not a binding document. That's something that Congress uses just to plan out its spending and tax work for the rest of the year. They are now trying to implement that budget resolution with actual legislation.
So what's on the chopping block?
Well, they're looking at a number of different programs, Medicare, Medicaid, some agriculture programs, some fee increases on things like immigrant visas, a pretty broad array of things. And what they're attempting to do is not cut any of them too deeply. They're trying to put together a package of about $35 to $50 billion in cuts that they can get through both chambers without causing so much pain that the Republican majority loses too many of their members to get it done.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about increasing fees for certain kinds of things. Well, that might be okay, but certainly nothing that Congress could allow to be described as a tax.
They certainly aren't describing these things as taxes or revenue increases. They're pointing to the net savings from this package. But as I said, there are a number of increases. Just one other example, Congress wants to raise the fees that corporations have to pay to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. The problem with an idea like that is a lot of these companies are already in a lot of financial stress, and critics of these proposals would argue that what you might end up doing would be driving more companies into bankruptcy by raising pension fees at this time.
Some people would point out the board's in some difficulty as well and could use increased revenue. But anyway, this is the contest that goes on all the time in these budget battles, because as you're trying to, well, increase Medicare spending for Katrina victims over here, you're trying to reduce Medicare spending overall.
Right. And this is an unusual actual exercise for Congress. They haven't done a budget reconciliation package, as this is called, since 1997, where they actually attempt to do a real broad range of cuts like this in one single package. And so you've really got an interesting display of that kind of horse trading going on right mm-hmm. now.
And interesting also in that one of the major horse traders that's been involved for the last several years is not really active in this session. That's Tom DeLay, the former majority leader of the House of Representatives, and really they didn't call him the hammer for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Correct. He was an effective legislator, whatever anyone might think of his political views. He certainly helped the Republicans get things done with a thin majority in the House. Republicans now have to rely on a man named Blunt from Missouri. He is now the majority leader. He's taken Tom DeLay's place. There's a lot of questions right now about the role that Tom DeLay still might be playing in running the House and how much he might be doing to help them get things done. But mm-hmm. this will likely be the biggest test for Mr. Blunt in the post-Tom DeLay era when they bring this bill up on the House floor.
And we should point out that Tom DeLay is, of course, still a member of Congress from the state of Texas. He's had to resign from the leadership position that he held pending the outcome of his indictment in Texas on money laundering charges involving political fundraising. So that story remains to be seen. And when that's going to be resolved, I guess nobody has any idea. But no time soon, certainly not by the time this budget fight is going to be resolved.
Correct.
Now, the Senate says its $10 billion in cuts to Medicare and Medicaid won't directly affect individuals who receive benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Well, again, what they're trying to do is raise fees, for example. They're trying to they're trying to change the Medicare law that was passed in 2002, for example, as it relates to drug costs and the drug reimbursement rates. A number of little things like that. They're also trying to eliminate a special pool of funds that was created to help draw companies into the Medicare prescription drug program. President Bush strongly opposes this, but again, it's something that they can do without directly impacting beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm. And is the House version of this bill likely to look very different on Medicare?
No, they look quite similar. The House takes a deeper swipe at Medicare. They're looking for more cuts. The Senate decided to evenly split its cuts between Medicare and Medicaid. Mm-hmm. They wanted to reduce the impact of these cuts on Medicare, and the House so far is not inclined to do that.
Food stamps are a particularly touchy issue, particularly after the situation with the hurricanes who displaced so many families. What's at stake there?
Well, yes, correct. One of the things that the Democrats have liked to point out again and again and again is that with the hurricane sweeping through the Gulf Coast and now Florida just recently, this is no time to be taking a swipe at programs that help the poor. But one of the things the Republicans have done is add some sweeteners to this package. This package of cuts is actually about something like $70 billion in spending cuts combined with about $35 billion in spending increases. So, for example, they have added some sweeteners for Gulf state lawmakers for Katrina aid, not food stamps, but in other areas. So they did, for example, manage to win the vote of Mary Landrieu of Louisiana for this budget cut package in the Senate.
Now, there's no budget resolution in history that doesn't have at least a couple of really interesting non-germane amendments attached to it. Mm-hmm. This one has a couple of interest to a lot of people. One that would open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for oil drilling. That's in the Senate version of the bill. The House version includes legislation to break up the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal circuit court system there in the state of on the West Coast, not just California, mm-hmm. and Hawaii, for that matter. What are those measures doing in a budget bill?
Well, I'm not sure what they're doing in a budget bill, but historically, these budget packages, when they've come along, which, as I said, is not all the time, but when they come along, they do tend to become magnets for a variety of different things that lawmakers want to get done. And technically, Congress was supposed to have adjourned back in early October, so they're getting antsy to get out of town. There are a lot of little dogs and cats that they want to get done. And I guess I'm referring more now to the court proposal. In terms of, I'm not sure where that one came from, but all of a sudden it's now part of this package, and they want to split up the Ninth Circuit and create a 12th Circuit.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Ninth is the largest circuit, covers a design when that part of the country was nowhere near as populous as it is now. There's a lot of people who want to break it up, but there's got to be an agenda here.
Well, I'm not sure what the Republican agenda is, but I do know that the California Democrats do oppose it. Both Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein have come out with statements strongly opposing this. They're saying that it would increase the burden on the Ninth Circuit because they wouldn't provide enough judges for the new reconstituted Ninth Circuit. And it still would be an extraordinarily large circuit even after this plan was implemented.
Now, thank you for all of that. And we're going to keep you here as a political reality referee, because we're now going to play this this game of cutting the federal budget. Joining us is Kathleen Camilli, principal and founder of Camilli Economics and on the board of directors for the National Council of Economic Education. She joins us from NPR's Bureau in New York City. Good of you to be with us today.
Nice to be here.
Now, the National Council on Economic Education has a budget simulation game on its website, and the figures are based on the nation's 2002 federal budget. Throughout the program, we're going to run through about 7 line items and see if we can balance that sample federal budget on our own. If you have thoughts about whether to cut or raise spending on health, Social Security, Medicare, or transportation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can also play along by going to npr.org and clicking on the National Budget Simulation link. Whatever you do, you can also send us email questions at TOTN at NPR.org. And here's an email that we got from Brian in Ferndale, Michigan. Cut number one, health care for the president and Congress until 100% of Americans have health coverage. Let me submit that to the Political Reality Committee sitting across the table. Dan Parks, is that going to happen?
Of course not. Members of Congress do get quite generous health care benefits, but they aren't going to take those away from themselves. They just aren't going to do it. And it wouldn't save all that much money. I can't tell you off the top of my head how much money it would save, but that would be their argument. And they would be correct. In dollar terms, it would just be a drop in the bucket.
Let's get a caller on the line. And this is Steve. Steve's calling us from Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes. I guess the point I want to make is that I'm really afraid that a financial crisis is the greatest threat to U.S. security long term. And we have to, you know, cut both our federal debt and our trade debt. And I think you have to look at the two biggies. And I don't believe that we can compete in the world economy and continue to spend as much as the rest of the world combined on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to cut our defense spending down to, say, the same percent of GDP as Britain. And that might save $200 billion a year. And then we really have to reform health care. We spend 15% of GDP on health care. European democracies get by with 10%. If we could just increase our efficiency to 10% of GDP, that would save, I think, about $500 billion a year. That's the only way we can possibly, because our deficits are really understated. I mean, if you actually look in the total liabilities, which include the retirement programs and the increase in the federal debt ceiling each year, we're actually running a much higher deficit, real deficit, than the politicians are claiming.
Well, why don't we take we may have to take the answer to part of that off the over the break, Steve. But your game, Kathleen, calls for national defense actually to be increasing, but that's positing a political situation.
That's correct. But just in response to what Steve has said, don't forget that we're not Europe. We're the United States. We do have a big portion of the total government spending that's allocated to defense. Those are quick and easy solutions, but sometimes a lot more difficult to actually pass.
I'm an ex-military officer, and I know that this guy just wrote this book on how Congress is hurting the defense of the United States by basically turning the defense bill into big pork barrel spending.
Dan Parks, waste in the defense budget, that's a hearty alternative, isn't it?
Well, there's waste everywhere. You can't have an organization the size of the Defense Department without having some waste. But you couldn't slash defense spending at the rate that this caller's talking about and save those kind of dollars. You would have to dramatically decrease the U.S. force structure around the globe to do something like that.
It would take a long time. It's not going to show up next year, even if you set out to do it, even if you could get the votes to do it.
Correct.
All right, we're going to be looking at more of these questions when we come back from a short break. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email us, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the nation's bottom line. The Senate passed its version of the federal budget. The House may act later this week. Dan Parks from Congressional Quarterly is our guest with all the details. And we're playing a game that puts you in charge of the budget. If you want to try your hand at making cuts, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Kathleen Camilli is principal and founder of Camilli Economics and sort of our game referee here. And Kathleen, one of the things that people, if you're looking towards cuts, our previous caller was talking about defense and health. He picked out two major areas where that's a big areas of spending.
They certainly are. And those would be the ones that you would want to chip away at if you could find the right programs that were amenable to everybody. But of course, that's always the trick in reducing the deficit, is that one person's what one person wants to slash is another person's favorite program. So it's much harder to do than it looks.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email we got from Eric saying, this game is impossible. How can anybody balance the budget when one's not allowed to cut defense spending or raise taxes? Defense spending is the largest chunk with the most waste. And he's got a point there.
Well, there's one other item that we haven't talked about yet, and that would be Social Security. It's interesting that that hasn't even come up yet. I'll be interested to hear whether any of your callers want to dive into that subject, but that's obviously the third major component of government spending.
Mm-hmm. And you go ahead. I'm
also
sorry.
There's nothing that really says that the budget has to be perfectly balanced. You know, we did run a surplus in the late 1990s because there were large capital gains coming into the Treasury. Now we're running a deficit because we have bigger military spending because of the war in the Middle East, but there's nothing that says it has to be balanced. And don't forget that we have large demand for our securities right now coming from our major trading partners, and particularly from China.
Mm-hmm. But I think it is a cause for concern, though, when you're in a situation where it appears that you've got a permanent structural discrepancy between your income and your outlays. And I think we're there. I think the current the tax code as it's currently structured, combined with our demographics of an aging society, spell real trouble over the long haul. I don't think this is a situation where we're going to swing in and out of deficit and surplus, which is actually, you're correct, that would be ideal if we could do, if we could do something like that, but we're not there.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Gary. Gary calling us from Poway, is that right, California?
Yep, Poway.
Poway, go ahead.
Hey, just a quick question. Why can't the federal government issue securities, equities, instead of debt? I know it's simple, but instead of going into debt, why couldn't the U.S. government issue securities, take those funds, pay off the debt, and instantly create value? It would seem to me that not only domestically but internationally, people would be very motivated to invest in the U.S. government and quit getting us more into debt. Take all of that horsepower and reduce the debt through equities.
Is your last name Ponzi, Gary?
No.
Because it sounds like one of those perpetual motion machines that he's talking about, Kathleen.
Well, let's just talk about equity for a minute. I mean, there have been proposals by the president and his administration to allow people to invest some of their Social Security monies that are set aside in the equity market. And certainly with the rates of return on equities over the last two decades, that's a fairly decent idea, as opposed to having it sit in non-governmental securities at very low interest rates, because we are in a low interest rate environment.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as wiping out the debt with equity issuance, I don't think that's going to happen.
I'd just like to ask Gary if he'd be interested in buying some stock in the United States government right now. It doesn't make any money. It spends more than it earns. Its balance sheet isn't looking too good right now.
Gary's hustling off to meet with his broker. Here's another email. This is from Mort in Hamilton, Ohio. Everyone talks about the budget, but few, if any, talk about the national debt of almost $7 trillion, on which we pay interest of about $332 billion per year. Isn't this huge expense newsworthy? And indeed, net interest is one of the items on your budget simulation, Kathleen.
Yes, and I'm glad that one of your callers touched on that, because it is a very large line item, $200 billion roughly, and growing every day. And, of course, we've been running deficits since the mid-1960s. So we have, as the caller pointed out, large $7 trillion worth of debt outstanding. The only way we can lower that figure would be to change our rules so that we issue more short-term debt when interest rates are low,
mm-hmm.
And more long-term debt if long-term interest rates go down. But that number is it's big and getting bigger, and there's really nothing you can do about it.
Or get into another surplus situation and pay it down.
That's correct. But we, as you well know, we lived through an internet bubble when we went into surplus. So that was the first time that happened in two decades, and that was an exceptional situation in the late 1990s.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Deborah. Deborah calling us from El Cerrito in California.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
I don't think the game is cutting the budget. I think it's fully funding America's human needs. So I would repeal tax cuts for individuals earning over $500,000, institute an alternative minimum tax for corporations who evade taxation through offshore shells, and redirect military spending toward vet benefits and on-the-ground armaments instead of the Star Wars type, and cut funding to any private military contractor who's already defrauded the government out of $100 million or more until they make restitution,
mm-hmm.
and raise the Social Security tax threshold to $150,000.
There are some political realities that are involved there. But, Deborah, your aims, you say, are human needs and not necessarily whether the budget line is plus or minus or where it is.
Well, you know, there used to be a sing-song about welfare queens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the elaborate structure of corporate welfare puts any individual to shame. And I think if someone did a graph of the billions that we give to private corporations to subsidize their research or their waste disposal and clean up and all of that, we could save probably a trillion.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find that. Where is that stuff that Deborah's talking about? Where is it in the budget? I'm sure it's there, but some of the transportation projects, for example, the port projects?
Mm-hmm. Those are off the table. There are some lawmakers who tried to bring those things back onto the table and maybe repeal some of those transportation projects that were in the highway bill, if that's what you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
In reference to the caller's point about the corporate tax code, she's correct in that the corporate tax code is incredibly complex. Every now and then Congress goes through a convulsion where they actually do seem to realize that the tax code is too complex. And back in 86, they did greatly simplify it. And then pretty much every year since then, they've gone about making it more complicated again by adding all sorts of deductions for both individuals and corporations. And it has become, I think, excruciatingly difficult for the IRS to sort of to keep track of what corporations are up to and to try to get their fair share from everybody.
A presidential commission made proposals to redo the tax structure last week
to very little applause, and but it did get some applause in the media. There's some columnists who have had some good things to say about it. It's an interesting proposal. It's actually two proposals, but right now that would take, I think, a strong president in a strong position to start hauling something like that through mm-hmm. Congress, and I don't see that happening anytime soon. They might get started on it next year, but who knows?
The Deborah budget plan may take a while to be enacted.
Well, I think it's a wonderful simulation, and can ordinary people access it other times?
Kathleen?
Yes, they certainly can. You go to the National Council on Economic Education website, which is www.ncee.org, and more specifically www.econedlink.org, and you'll find the national budget simulation right there, and you can play along.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Deborah.
Bye.
Here's an email question from Jason in Vancouver, Washington. Farm subsidies cost the U.S. government billions and distort trade priorities. In 2002, these cost about $16 billion per year, at least according to Wikipedia, same year that your budget numbers are based on. Deborah, Kathleen, why are these huge subsidies, asks Jason, so necessary when our national economy is increasingly global? Agriculture you have listed as $28.7 billion.
That's right, and it's a relatively small line item, but let's not forget that farmers have to deal with the trials and tribulations of seasons and droughts and floods and all kinds of natural events that are not controlled by man. And in the history of our country, we have always provided subsidies to farmers because of those elements mm-hmm. that they had to deal with.
Yet, Dan Parks, it's not Ma and Pa Kent so much anymore as big corporations.
If I recall correctly, the Republican lawmaker Chuck Grassley from Iowa attempted to cap some of the subsidies at $250,000. It was either $250,000 for the subsidy or the size of the farm, but mm-hmm. That went down in flames, as those sorts of things always do. There are some very, very large corporations engaged in the business of agriculture that are benefiting from these subsidies.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Chris calling us from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yes, my question is another type of subsidy or corporate welfare. I don't know how much of a line item this is, and it's a quick question. Legacy carriers, airlines, and transportation, how much is the government supporting them as in a budget or just a reactionary pressures to stuff like fuel increases they have to pass on? They got to let them freely compete against other carriers in a world economy?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to just support corporations that are run poorly and aren't subject to the whims of nature like farmers are? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Chris, thanks very much. Transportation, Kathleen, is
it's about 61.3. Right, you've got 61.3 billion, and yes, indeed, there are subsidies to carriers, and we do tend to bail them out when they go into bankruptcy. We can't afford to have airlines not be able to take people across the country and across the world, and that is that's a line item, not as significant as some of the others. And
mm-hmm. After 9/11, I think there were at least two tranches, I think, of help for the airlines at $1 billion per. Is that right?
I believe those were loan pools that were created for them. I'm not aware of. I can't recall if they were direct subsidies or not. But I think most
loan
of the
guarantees
informed,
could have been
informed
yes.
guarantees.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nothing to sneeze at. Not exactly chopped liver, but it's not going to solve your budget deficit problem either.
Oh, correct. But there are an awful lot of projects out there, an awful lot of roads being built. Some of them perhaps of questionable need. As Kathleen points out, $61 billion. I think that sounds right. That's real money.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Edgar calling us from Grand Junction in Colorado.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Edgar.
I have a question for the about Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they remove Social Security from the budget? It's a separate entity. The government doesn't put anything into it, but they certainly like to take it out. And if you remove it from the budget, it would take quite a bit off of the bottom line.
$459 billion on the 2002 line item there, Kathleen.
Yes, indeed. Well, it is one of the biggest line items, and if you were to take it out or put it off budget, could you conceivably fund it? That is, the base of workers is getting smaller and smaller, and the base of recipients is getting larger and larger because of our aging population and demographics. So how are you going to pay them? If the base of workers is getting smaller, the money has to come from somewhere. Again, going back to the suggestion that some of that money be invested elsewhere, not in non-marketable securities, but instead perhaps in the equity market, might be at least an attempt at trying to get better returns on savers' money.
Just a quick reality check. Dan Parks, is President Bush's proposal to privatize some Social Security accounts, is that going to go anywhere in this Congress?
No, I think that's dead on arrival. No, I shouldn't say dead on arrival. It's dead now. It's certainly not going anywhere this year, and Republicans haven't talked at all in Congress about taking it up next year.
We're talking about the difficulties of budget cutting. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Edgar, with us on the phone from Grand Junction, Colorado, says, you know, take Social Security off the budget. I assume, Edgar, so you can leave Social Security alone, right?
Yeah, leave it alone.
And part
of I realize that a lot of government business is being farmed out to India,
mm-hmm.
And if it was all done here in the United States. We are big enough to be a separate entity all alone, but that would be impossible.
Well, Kathleen, I did want to ask. A lot of people want to leave Social Security as it is, and certainly its reputation for the third rail of politics well justified by the events of the past year. Nevertheless, on the Willie Sutton proposal of why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. If you're going to cut the federal budget, well, that's where the money is.
That's right.
If you took Social Security off budget, as the caller suggests, technically it is off budget, but really it isn't in the way these things work in Washington, you'd make the deficit look even worse because currently the size of the deficit is being masked by a surplus in the Social Security system.
Oh, I see. Now,
that's going to change in the not-too-distant future. Social Security is going to start paying out a whole lot more money than it's bringing in. And so I'm not sure if the caller is still drawing Social Security in 20 years, if he's going to want the budget separated, because it could require some substantial cuts in benefits if you pulled Social Security away like that.
But. And there is another suggestion, and I think that this has come up over the last year, is let's put some limits on the income that people earn. People above certain income limits, people mm-hmm. who have interest in dividend income, perhaps shouldn't get the full boat on Social Security. Perhaps it should be a program that's designated for people who haven't been able to accumulate assets over the course of their lifetime.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about that, though, Democrats typically are the first to jump out and oppose that sort of thing. And you'd think, well, why wouldn't Democrats support perhaps cutting benefits, Social Security benefits for rich people? But the fact is they don't support that. And the reason is because they feel that would change the nature of the program, that would create a welfare program out of Social Security.
From something that you have earned, everybody has earned, to something that some people are given welfare.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Well. And if you're going to do that, then you really got to go back to the beginning of when Social Security started and why it was started as a social safety net. And don't forget that we reformed the welfare programs that were started back in the 30s and reformed in the 60s. We reformed them under the Clinton administration. So the program is really overdue for a rehaul. And I don't think there's anything that says we can't rethink it.
Edgar, thanks very much for the phone call. And Dan, before we let you go, we do have to remember that as senators are debating, $30 billion here and $15 billion, they're talking about things that have real effects on real people's lives.
Yes, there will be some real effects on people's lives. Doctors, for example, they are slated to get some cuts for their services to Medicare. If this legislation passes, those cuts won't go through. On the other hand, people who receive food stamps, some of those people who are on the edge of eligibility, may end up losing some of their benefits.
Mm-hmm. And those might include recent arrivals in terms of immigration.
I would think so, yes. And then also, as I think I mentioned earlier, there could be some fees going up for recent arrivals and for some of their visas.
It'll be interesting to watch the process work out. I hope the project, the organization in Congress a little bit better than we had on this program today. But Dan Parks, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate your time.
It's glad to be here.
Dan Parks is Assistant Managing Editor at Congressional Quarterly, former Economics and Finance Editor for that magazine. He was with us here in Studio 3A. Kathleen Camilli, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Kathleen Camilli is principal and founder of Camilli Economics and on the board of directors for the National Council on Economic Education, and she joined us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking about a development in the investigation at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, where a board member has resigned. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.